Hi there, welcome to this week's episode of the podcast with me, Russell Davis. This week I'm joined by a very special guest. I rarely have guests on this podcast and I save those guest spots to people really special, and Gabriella is one of those people. Gabriella Rosa is a renowned fertility specialist. She's a best-selling author, a Harvard University awarded scholar, a researcher, a speaker and an educator. I've been working in this space for nearly 15 years. When I first started working in fertility, I started to see who else is around the fertility space working in a more natural, holistic way. And Gabriella is one of those people that really jumped out for the work she was doing. I love technology. I used to be an IT manager, and I've been working online with clients around the world for some time. But Gabriella pioneered telemedicine, particularly in fertility treatment, and she's the founder of the first ever global virtual fertility clinic with the Rosa Institute. Gabriella can share some things I can't share. She can help you for more holistic physical space, looking at your physical health and your environment, and looking at the things you can do to improve your fertility and chance of success from that physical space. We both have the same perspective when it comes to our approaches for fertility, about taking a step back and focusing on Project You rather than Project Baby. So I'm really excited to be sharing this time with Gabriella, and she's got a very special gift for you, a very generous gift. She wants to gift you a physical copy of her book. So wherever you are in the world, you can get a physical copy of her book free of charge, even free postage. Click on the link and all the details are in the show notes. So let's grab a cup of tea and just relax and enjoy this very special conversation with a very special person, Gabriella. So, Gabriella, it's so wonderful to have you on the podcast today. You're my second person I've interviewed. I save the interview slots of the most very special people in the world of fertility. And, as we were talking earlier, how I've been kind of following your work for 15 years and a real big fan of what you do. So it's great to actually be connecting and having this conversation today.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you so much, Russell. And it's always such a privilege. And I always feel so honoured when it has been a long time event before we actually get to meet each other. And I'm really glad that we made the time and that we could find a time that in our opposite time zones that we could actually connect. So it's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So obviously I specialize in the psychology of the journey, and I talk about Project You versus Project Baby a lot. So many people focus on Project Baby and the fear of not having a baby, and my approach about taking a step back and looking at the psychology behind all that. And I say the more you focus on Project Baby, so Project Baby takes more care of itself. And I truly believe too many couples go through treatment unnecessarily, and the success rate of treatment is unnecessarily low because of the mind and the psychology not taken care of. And I know you have similar kind of beliefs when it comes to the physicality, their physical health is maybe not taken care of as well as it could be. My little subscribers, my audience, are trying to do everything they can to try and get pregnant, whether it's naturally or maybe they have a failed IVF. And I look, and I'm not an expert in the physical side, but there's so much they could be doing. Where would you suggest they start?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's so true. And it's wonderful that you asked that question at the outset, because often people either they will go to their doctor and they'll get a referral. You know, it's just like they'll go to their doctor, they're having difficulty conceiving. They'll essentially be told, look, you need to go to IVF. So they'll get a referral, go to see an IVF doctor. Literally, the IVF doctor looks at them, may prescribe or refer for a couple of tests, but really says, you know, look, just come back in however many days or weeks and we'll get a cycle started. And it's like, okay, but hang on a second. You know, like, isn't that too soon? Like, what do we need to do? We need to start straight away. Is that really what we need to do? And, you know, the research shows it's quite interesting, because in terms of the mental and psychological aspects of how men and women respond to the fertility journey, I'm sure that you would be able to verify this. It's very different, isn't it? I mean, women, we're very much, we kind of like, I always like to say that when it comes to fertility, men have this amazing ability to put all of their feelings and emotions into this little box. They will, you know, kind of get everything in there. They will put the lid on it. They'll put it in the back of the cupboard and they'll go to work, you know, whereas women, we tend to jump into the box and that's where we live our lives from that point onwards. Yeah. And of course, that's a huge challenge in its own right, because it's difficult to get two people into that box. And it's difficult to be able to actually get people to connect and respond to each other rather than react when that's going on. So there are several steps that really need to happen in order for a couple to ensure that they're putting the foundations in place that are required to get to the best possible outcome that they're looking for. You know, we know from epidemiological research of population, you know, populations around the world, that when it comes to fertility, and certainly at peak fertility, a couple has an average of 3 months' time for pregnancy. So literally it's get pregnant, you know, have a baby, like have sex, get pregnant, have a baby, done. Mm. We're no longer having this conversation. Mm. When we're still having this conversation, then we need to actually understand, but hang on a second, why? Mm. Why are we still having this conversation? What are the factors or obstacles to optimum fertility that perhaps are present in this case that are stopping us from having the outcome that for the general population we see, which is, you know, an average of 3 months' time to pregnancy? What we also know from population studies is that when we add an obstacle to optimum fertility, or a minor factor, as I like to call it, into that equation, all of a sudden we go from an average of 3 months' time to pregnancy to an average of 2 years. So there's a huge compounding effect that goes on that we need to then take into consideration. We add a second minor factor. Mind you, a minor factor or an obstacle to optimal fertility can be anything from, you know, being diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome, or having poor sperm parameters, or having blood sugar regulation issues. You know, you pick any of those and that constitutes one minor factor. With that second minor factor that gets added, all of a sudden we go from an average of 2 years to 7 years, and a third gives us an average of 40 years time to pregnancy. Now, nobody has 40 years to get pregnant, right? And so we need to kind of really get very clear, and this is one of the things that we absolutely focus on in terms of treatment in my clinic, because one thing that I believe is that unexplained infertility is a poor diagnosis. Mm. It's a very, very kind of poor diagnosis where you really don't know what it is that you're trying to address. So even though the treatment has become a one-size-fits-all, you know, everyone here, go to IVF or ICSI or whatever it is that is recommended, it really doesn't take into account what are all of the pieces of a human that you're actually dealing with. And sometimes, you know, these pieces, not just the mental, but the physical, the biochemical, you know, all of the pieces that essentially are giving us the result that we are experiencing, whether it's infertility, inability to keep a pregnancy to term, all of those things are an outcome. They're an end result of a biochemical chain reaction that starts infinitely sooner than the result that we actually get. Right. And so really, when we're dealing in a situation like that, we can't expect that we're going to do one step before that outcome, i.e. IVF or ICSI, and have the best possible outcome. We really have to kind of almost like, you know, look at the situation from above and see, okay, what are all of the pieces? You know, I like to say that infertility or recurrent miscarriage are like a 1,000-piece puzzle. You know, have you ever done a 1,000-piece puzzle, Russell?
Yeah, I have. Takes on time.
Yeah, okay. So exactly. But you see, the beauty of normal puzzles is that you go to a shop, you get the one that you think, you know, on the shelf looks nice. It comes in a lovely little box or big box, depending on, you know, what size the pieces. And there's a picture on the cover. All of the pieces are nicely and neatly, you know, kind of in this little plastic bag inside the box. And you've got everything in there. Infertility and miscarriage puzzles are a little bit different to that. You know, we have a couple of little pieces here and there. It's more of a treasure hunt, you know, for puzzle pieces than it is actually getting. And you certainly don't know what that picture is meant to look like. you know, at the end of that kind of puzzle being built, other than the fact that you hope that somewhere in there you're holding the healthy baby of your dreams in your arms, right? And so ultimately, though, what we need to really figure out is, okay, where are the pieces to begin with? Because if we don't know where the pieces are, if we don't know what they look like, if we don't know the textures and the colors and how it is that we are actually going to bring them together to create a cohesive picture, how can we expect to be able to treat that effectively? And that really, unfortunately, is the one thing that doesn't happen in standard therapy. Now, of course, I'm going around the, you know, a little bit of a roundabout kind of way to answer your question, because I want to give context and I want to have a little bit of a foundation before I say the very simple thing that I'm going to actually recommend in terms of how people actually treat this issue. But you see, when we are dealing with that puzzle piece, or those puzzle pieces, that we have some, but we know that there's some others hiding under different places, and we know that we need to actually find more to be able to get a proper understanding of the problem or what it is that we're dealing with. By being kind of just told what it is that you should be doing and not being proactive about different aspects of your health and your lifestyle and your environmental exposures and the modifiable risk factors that are present in your day-to-day environment, you really are not giving yourself the best possible chance of transforming that experience, no matter what. Right? Being told by anybody that, oh, okay, this is your path and this is where you should go. And then when you ask the question, you know, but is there anything else I can do to improve my chances or to optimize, you know, this whole process from working? And then being told no and accepting that as a real answer is the big problem.
Yeah, totally agree.
You know, because that is not the answer. That is not the right answer. That is not an answer that's going to give us the outcome that we're looking for. We know there was a retrospective analysis that was published in Human Reproduction, which is a very prestigious medical journal. And they showed out of 178,000 plus cases, so it was almost 179,000 IVF cycles, they showed that in order to have a close to 80% live birth rate through IVF, you needed, on average, guess how many cycles?
I don't know.
Let's see if you can, let's give it a guess. Give it a guess, Russell.
Three?
Well, the actual average was 8.
Wow.
8 IVF cycles to have a close to 80% live birth rate. Now, what I know in my clinic is that we have a 78.15% live birth rate for patients who go through the program, and they normally conceive naturally. And when they don't and they need IVF, one or two cycles is the most that we've ever had them need, right, in order to actually be able to take home a baby.
Yeah.
So we can see that there's a huge disparity in that process of kind of like, okay, is this really working, right? And the reality is that standard therapy, sometimes it leaves a lot to be desired for the patients going through it, because it doesn't actually give people the empowerment they need to understand those risk factors. So when we're talking about, you know, what is it that you can do, it's really so simple. But, you know, we often take simple as the thing that, oh, you know, is that really going to work? Which is, well, if you apply it consistently, it's amazing what you will see. You know, the foundation for optimum health and for optimum fertility is always going to be your health. That is the first step. And so if we ensure that we do as I recommend, which is to act pregnant now to get pregnant later, we are much more likely to be able to get that outcome and that result that we're looking for, right? And it's not just one person doing it, it's both. It's both partners really ensuring that they're doing the things that are going to actually make them the healthiest version of themselves. And that's really where we begin.
I love that, you know, act now, because I always say it's a place to come from, not a place to get to, even psychologically. You're thinking a baby's going to make you happy, feel complete. Whatever psychologically you think you get from having a baby, it's living from that space now. And sometimes it's not fake it till you make it. There's psychological things you can do to make that authentic. So you really do feel those things authentically. So creating the container you want to bring your family into now, yeah, it's a place to come from. So I love what you're saying, to act now rather than,
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, if we don't address those areas, if we ignore the dietary pieces, the modifiable risk factors are everywhere, from the things that you choose to put on your body, into your body, onto your skin, you know, the things you touch in your day-to-day, the things that surround you will eventually dictate what your health is actually going to be like. Mm-hmm. We know that there are lots of different studies. You know, I have been very privileged. I'm completing a master's in public health at Harvard University at the moment, and one of my professors is a world-leading researcher on phthalates and bisphenols, oh. right? And her work essentially pretty much validates everything that I've been talking about for the last 20 years, which is quite fascinating that they got there so late, you know, but that's okay. They got there eventually with the science. And they show now that, you know, plastics and things that are made out of plastic, things that outgas plastic, receipts, you know, how often do we go to a shop and we pick up a receipt and we, you know, kind of hold it and then we put our hands in our faces, in our mouths, or we don't wash our hands properly and we actually have something to eat. You know, all of those chemicals are impregnated in our hands. We end up ingesting them. And we know that that's been known to cause, increase the risk of reproductive dysfunction, miscarriages, infertility, and so on. Now, what the one thing that I really like to tell people is that you don't want to be completely and utterly paranoid about everything that you do in your day to day, you know, because ultimately it's so easy to, you know, all of a sudden become literally obsessed with everything that you do. But if, on the other hand, it's also important not to ignore the things that you can actually do. Mm. So there is a balance, you know, to that, which is you do your best. Mm. What I tell my patients every single day, you know, when they start to become really overly hyper, you know, focused on, you know, every little thing that they touch and everything that's on their kind of, you know, day-to-day environment, I say, take a deep breath. Take a deep breath and do your best. You know, don't do any worse than your best, but don't do any more than your best, because then you're going to be in that realm of doing 80% of the work that only gives you 20% of the, you know, the result that you want anyway, and it exhausts you.
Yeah, I love that, because I say that we always are doing our best, and it's the fear of not doing our best means we start fretting about it. I'm actually always doing our best. We do the best we can with the resources available in any given moment. So we should stop being hard on ourselves, because we're always doing our best.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, you know, there's such an important message in that. It's not to be too hard on ourselves, because the journey of infertility and miscarriage, it's so easy to blame oneself. You know, it's so easy to go, oh, but this must have happened because of something that I did, or something that I ate, or something that I didn't do, or something. And you know what? The reality is that if the body is robust and taken care of and well prepared, there's many reasons as to why these things actually happen or don't happen. And it's not going to be because of something that you did or didn't do. Mm. If you are consistently doing your best over a period of time, that things didn't happen, right? Or that you needed to actually apply some other ways of doing things. So I think that it's really important to be able to be compassionate towards oneself, and to be able to understand that, okay, for all of those things, you know, and in that vein of acting pregnant now to getting pregnant later, when we think about it and we dissect that and we actually get a little bit deeper into what it really means, as I said before, we want to make sure that both partners are on that same path together. And the reason that we want that is because we know that a baby is a 50-50 equation. It's 50% the sperm, it's 50% the egg. So it's not a situation, you know, in standard therapy, unfortunately, it's very geared towards the woman, you know, takes the kind of prime kind of role and focus of everything that needs to happen and everything that needs to be done. The man is almost kind of like the sperm donor. Right. And then he's done his bit and he can kind of like go away and is no longer needed. And we know that that's not a great way of ensuring that a couple gets the best possible outcome at the end of that journey. Yet it's still how it happens, or how it's done, you know, inverted commas. So from the perspective of acting pregnant now to get pregnant later, I always say, you know, if the men could visualize themselves as being pregnant, I know that if that could happen, we would have infinitely less babies in the world. But, you know, it is what it is. And I know I am talking to a man, so I can pick on you a little bit this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, like women do get the short end of the stick. Absolutely. On this whole journey. But, you know, if men could actually have a baby, it's about thinking and looking at, okay, if I was pregnant right now, what are the things that I would absolutely start doing or stop doing to ensure that my baby had the best possible start in life, right? Had the best chance of being the healthiest that it can be or fulfilling all its potential. And those are the places where you want to start right now. And for each person, it would be different. Right. Because for some people might smoke or take drugs or drink too much alcohol or whatever it is. And so in those instances, we know that it's going to be different to somebody who already is doing all of the healthy things and going to the gym and eating really well. And, you know, and yet both of those people might have challenges in terms of their fertility and need to be addressed and helped in a very different way. But if we put the foundation in place, because, you know, sometimes people come to me and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm already doing all of the healthy things. I'm already avoiding all of these things in my environment. I'm already doing all my healthy diet, taking my supplements, taking, you know, whatever. And, you know, I'm already doing all of those things. And I said, and, you know, how is this any different? And I was like, okay, if you are doing all of the things that you need to be doing already, we wouldn't be having this conversation, right? Like, that really is the first point that we need to kind of come to in this discussion, because, you know, the conversation only persists and continues to the point where we still haven't found all of those puzzle pieces and put them in the right place yet. Right. And digging deeper into the biochemistry of what goes on, you know, like I often say, when we prepare a case for treatment in my clinic, we've already spent 9 hours worth of work before somebody comes in and has the first appointment. And for the purposes of creating the tables of correlation about their biochemistry so that we can understand what are the gaps, what are the places of opportunity, because really what we're treating is not the improvement of their diet or the improvement of their lifestyle. We're looking much deeper into, okay, what is it that's breaking down in that biochemical pathway that we talk about that takes us away from the result that we have to where it begins and to give us a result that we want, which is different from what we've experienced up until now?
Yeah, no, I love that. Even psychologically, when I work with a client, we often go back to childhood stuff because often their psychological experience today in their fertility journey is caused by beliefs and thoughts started in childhood. So you're actually tracking back to get into the roots of it, then you can deal with it rather than trying to deal with what you think is happening in this moment.
100%, 100%. And those things, they complement each other so beautifully, because often people have such a struggle to make those adjustments, to make those changes because of their pre-programming. Right? Because of all the way in which they were kind of taught to be or learned to be. And it's about learning a different way of being sometimes. And sometimes that really is what infertility and miscarriage calls us to do. You know, they call us to really dig so much deeper into, okay, what is it that we really are? Who are we really?
Totally,
you know, what is it that is important? You know, what do we really want? And, you know, it really kind of pushes us out of our comfort zone in a way that we typically wouldn't do the things that we, you know, even this, the self-inquiry that we are willing to do to get the result that we want when we're trying to have a baby, if we didn't actually have that challenge to contend with, you know, it gets us really to do a whole lot more of self-discovery that we wouldn't otherwise.
Totally agree.
So
love what you're saying and love the approach and that taking a step back. How can someone listening to this begin to do that in a way? What would you recommend them to start to do that bigger journey? I mean, maybe they can't do it anyway. Maybe they need that assistance, that they're going to test, whatever you offer. How can they begin to take this step back and look at some of the root causes in their own life?
Yeah, no, look, that's a great question. And one of the things that I recommend to my patients always is to get educated. You know, to really be able to understand more about what's actually happening. For, and sometimes people have been on this journey for such a long time, they think that they are already educated about all of the things that they need to be educated on, and then they come to our clinic and they realize that, no, actually they're not, you know, because they understand all of the DQ alphas and, you know, all of the, and it's like, okay, that's all great, but now let's really have a look at, you know, the that whole picture together, right? Because often in infertility and miscarriage, that you know, if we again refer back to the puzzle, it's so disconnected with pieces so all over the place that people can't really put it together, and most people can't put it together on their own.
Yeah.
But what does help is getting that understanding, that clarity, and that's one of the things that I wanted to actually offer to all the people who are listening into the podcast, which is a copy of Fertility Breakthrough, my book, because that I have condensed my 20 years of, you know, clinical work in this area and put together very simple steps that people can go, okay, this is something that I can actually do today that's going to help my fertility, that's going to improve my chances of not only getting pregnant, but helping my partner be healthier and have better sperm, and of course, improve our chances of actually being able to have a baby together. So some of the things, you know, if we go back again to the analogy of acting pregnant, you know, now to get pregnant later, we are very clear about some of the things that immediately we can start doing or not doing that are going to help us. You know, as I mentioned, it's important that both partners do it, and it's important that both partners self-assess in that regard. And, you know, from there, because even if you think about it, fertility is such a you know, it's such an individual situation. You know, for each partner, it may be different. You know, one partner may have a perfect diet. The other partner may eat chips at every meal, you know, or may have other lifestyle factors that will impact the quality of their sex cells. And so in which case we need to address those situations differently. But if we are to self-assess, and if we were to think in the terms that I've just talked about, which is if you were pregnant right now, what are the things that you would actually start doing to ensure your child had the best possible start in life? Most people will come up with a list of things.
Yeah.
You know, most people will actually be able to write down at least 10 things that they would be able to start doing or stop doing if they wanted to really give that child the best possible start in life, if it was dependent on them.
Yeah.
And so that's where I always recommend start with baby steps. Start with doing the little things that you can and building on them. It's like a muscle. You know, the more that you actually do something, the better you become at it. And then, of course, you can layer it and start to, you know, increase your level of ability in making those adjustments and making those improvements to your day-to-day lifestyle that will benefit the overall outcome that you're trying to create.
I love that. What comes to mind as you say that, you hear stories where women who perhaps smoke, when they get pregnant, they just stop smoking like that. And these kind of lifestyle changes seem to be quite more effortless when they know they're pregnant. And it's almost, yeah, if you were pregnant now, what would you do? Making those decisions from that space is a different way of looking at it, but also pretty enables you to dig deeper in the resources you need to implement and make those changes more sustainable.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because when you can actually, you know, the reason that a lot of people fail to make lifestyle improvements is because the gain is so far away into the future. You know, and so they don't quite link the fact that they will gain that down there 6, 10, 12 months down the track to their activity that they're doing right now. However, the second that you put that baby in the forefront of their mind and you actually start to look at those decisions in the day-to-day thinking that, okay, each one of these tiny little decisions, it's who you're being today that gets you where you want to be. You know, which is holding the healthy baby of your dreams in your arms. It's not even pregnant.
No.
You know, so you don't want to get pregnant. Nobody wants to get pregnant, let me tell you. There is no woman in the world that wants to get pregnant, right? I mean, sure, we want to experience motherhood pregnancy thing for like 5 minutes and then we're over it, done, you know, and we just want to have the baby. We just want the baby. So the reality is, and most people who experience infertility and recurrent miscarriage, the thing that they focus on is the getting pregnant piece. It's almost like they can't even necessarily visualize the actually holding a baby piece, you know? But I think that we need to put our sights further into that future of visualizing that child in your arms and your family as you want it to be, because that helps us to be able to make better choices in our day-to-day, knowing that, yes, that's what we're working towards. There is a reason, there is a purpose, there is a meaning.
And I think it also helps knowing you're doing it for your baby. I think it almost helps people make those loving, healthy choices. Because the choices we know, even if it's smoking or drinking, it may be, there's like a secondary gain. There's a part of us thinks we're gaining from it, whatever it may be, even though consciously we know it's destructive and not helping. There's other lifestyle changes we could be making. But that knowing you're doing it for someone else makes it makes you help make those loving choices. It's like even psychologically, I get into a younger self, and loving that younger self, they find that much easier than loving themselves today. When imagine embodying that, you know, bringing that younger you into them, they can love themselves, have more self-love and self-compassion psychologically than they can just thinking about themselves as an adult. So that kind of imagine they're pregnant and making those lifestyle changes from that space, I think, again, gives a depth of resources that enables them to make those loving, healthy choices from a deeper place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I love what you said too, in terms of, you know, that self recognition, you know, that younger self, that kind of like little five-year-old. I always talk about the five-year-old, you know, nurturing the five-year-old, because ultimately, if we can't have love, care, and compassion for that little soft part of ourselves that needs that love and that support and that cheerleading along the way, it makes the journey so much more difficult, unnecessarily.
Because if there's a negative thinking or fearful thinking, when we attract back that back, it tends to go back to childhood, whatever age it may be. There's a younger self behind that, the feeling scared, feeling insecure. And often we get frustrated with that part of us as an adult. We get frustrated with that negative part or fearful part because we think it's not serving us, it's not helping us. We start to resent it. What you do is start to resenting a five-year-old that's feeling scared and lonely. And when you do that, they feel worse. Their voice gets louder. So it doesn't actually help. When you can sort of give love and compassion to that part of you, that voice quietens.
Absolutely. And it then also enables you to make the physical steps that are required to actually get the result that you're looking for. Because sometimes, you know, I talk to a lot of people, and sometimes people think that, you know, they're just going to visualize that baby, or they're just going to, you know, kind of do the emotional work on getting that outcome. Yeah. But they fail to recognize and realize that they're smoking a packet of cigarettes every day.
Yeah.
You know, or drinking a bottle of wine every day. You know, and it's like, no matter how much you want to visualize that outcome, you are massively deterring yourself from actually getting it. Unless you start to modify the way that you behave, the way that you see the world, the way that you handle your stress, the way that you, you know, address the challenges and disappointments of your life in a different way to what perhaps you have learned up until this point.
Awesome. Gabriela, thank you. And I recommend everyone listening gets the book, and thank you for that generous gift. This is a physical copy of the book wherever you are in the world.
Yeah.
And Gabby is happy to send that to you. So you can start identifying the puzzle pieces in your jigsaw and working out what steps you need to take. So the details, again, the book are in the show notes. So I encourage everyone to do that so they can start identifying their jigsaw pieces.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me, Russell. It's been such a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a long time coming, but I'm glad we have connected and look forward to connecting again soon. Thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for having me.